Good evening, folks. Welcome to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Awesome Albert. What a name. Here we are live.
January 27th of 06.
27th. So if it's the 27th, or if you're in New Zealand or Australia or who knows, maybe Japan, and it's the 28th, you're welcome to join us. 850-479-DINO. We're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory being taught in our schools in violation of the First Amendment is the dumbest and the most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. Now, if you believe in evolution, we don't say that to hurt your feelings, okay? We say that for shock therapy, that you would stop and think about how silly this idea is, to teach the kids we all came from a rock. Albert is looking for my headphones. I think Ken Andrew took them for taping something. Yeah, see if he's got them. Okay. Anyway. You can join us on the program by calling 877-479-DINO, 877-479-3466, or 850-479-DINO. We only have one line into the studio, so if it's busy, I'm sorry, that's all we got, okay? We got a bunch of lines that can put you on hold here at the ministry, but that's it for the studio. Or you can AOL instant message us as soon as I click on the little man here. And Jonathan said he's just about done and might even be done. Did Albert get you?
He hasn't talked to me at all.
Jonathan doesn't like talking to you?
I don't know if it's that or it could be that.
Could be that, okay. You could try right guard, maybe you'll see if that'll help, okay? But anyway, you can instant message us at AOL instant message Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive. I have a bunch left over from yesterday, which I'm going to try to get to since we don't like to leave anybody hanging. Because then some atheists will say, well, I asked Hovind a question, and he never answered it. Duh. I only work 30 hours a day around here. Okay. And you can mail us questions, as I have several here, or comments. Let's see. This one from Kay Moodley, who writes in, a friend loaned me your CD, The Age of the Earth. I found it interesting and informative. Being a reborn Christian, I am grateful to God for your stand and wisdom. We're praying for your ministry from Kovilan Moodley from South Africa. You know, we had three people from South Africa today stop at our Dinosaur Adventure Land. And, oh, you found him. Okay. Just any of them will work, just so you can hear. I don't care. Some things just don't matter as you get older, you know. So that would be one of them. That's the wrong size. You need an adapter right here. There you go. And here we have one from, we did this one yesterday, Lupe Ayala. Nah, start poking it in some of the holes over there. Just it'll work. Oh, okay. All right, so you can join us on the program. We're pretty organized here. I was sick from 1 o'clock till 3 o'clock this afternoon. When I get sick, I just lay down, take a nap, feel great. I'll work till midnight tonight and get it going again. Okay, yesterday we had folks write to us, like the Bart Man, who says, I once blasted a wasp nest with liquid nitrogen and froze them. 30 minutes later, we read that one. They were alive and flying around the yard. We were talking yesterday about, somebody asked about crickets or animals that can freeze, absolutely freeze, and come back to life. And maybe they're not dead, okay, but they come back to animated state of activity. And that would be another example. Interesting. Freeze them with liquid propane. Okay. Here we go. Harold God Love. Says, what does Mr. Hovind think about the skulls LiveScience.com touts as being the missing links? Now, what does LiveScience.com have for missing links here? Albert, did you look at that one yesterday?
Not yesterday, but it might be one that I've looked at already.
I can't believe these guys at LiveScience believe that they came from a rock, you know, and here they are. Science deals with things we can observe and study and test and demonstrate. Evolution is none of those, that's for sure. Okay, here's lives. Oh, yeah, we talked about these guys, the top 10.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the top 10 live science. LiveScience.com, the proof for evolution. You know, they got a bunch of ape or human skulls, and that's somehow proof for, you know, we all came from a rock. You gotta be kidding. Okay, now I would be glad to comment on each of those on my seminar tape number 2. Where we talk about the so-called cavemen, Seminar 2B, which, by the way, the entire seminar has been redone in 2005 So if you have an older version, you may want to get the new one. It's now 18 and a half hours, Albert. I keep saying my 17-hour seminar. I add new stuff, and I'm sorry.
Hopefully, we'll be able to get it up to 24 hours.
Just part seven. The question answer, 5.5 hours.
Yeah, I know.
One of those double-stamped CDs.
But you're very detailed with it.
Well, the college class is even more detailed. But yeah, okay. Well, that's what we want it to be helpful, okay? We want to defend the idea that, you know, you did not come from a rock, and it's just... You shouldn't even have to discuss things like that, but there's so many people who are teaching it and spreading it around. It's kind of like when people used to teach, you know, oh, the earth is flat. Somebody needs to stand up and say, no, guys, it's not. And if that makes everybody mad, well, I'm sorry. Okay, get mad then, but, you know, you didn't come from a rock. Okay. Let's see. This website says, the same site also speaks how the Vatican says intelligent design is unnecessary and confusing, and that we should trust the scientists and evolutionists and follow them. I'm not Catholic, but I thought it was interesting. I think I have your DVDs and think you're doing a great job. Okay. Well, it doesn't surprise me that the Catholic Church leaders have said they support evolution. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. And it doesn't make it true, okay? There have been a lot of crazy things they've done through the years to say, let's see. There was also, we were supposed to check some, Albert, to see if there's questions in queue, right? All day long, people can send questions, right?
There's none.
Oh, good, okay. Well, we can get on to other topics. I have, push the right buttons here. About the Catholic Church, I'm not anti-Catholic, and I don't want to come across that way, okay? I'm simply for truth and against error, period, okay? Vatican, oh, here we go, Live Science Vatican. Yeah, we did that one. Get the right button. Sorry. Boy, I was sound asleep, Albert. I was sick, and I feel great now. It's cool.
Praise God.
I've done that all my life. You know, get sick, just lay down, go to sleep for an hour, 2 hours. And generally, that's it. 24-hour flu. My poor wife's been hacking and coughing for 4 weeks now. I don't know what she's got, but I don't want it. all right. Catholic Church. Several times, including here recently, the popes have said, evolution, you know, is fine. That's the way God did it. Well, not the God of the Bible, that's for sure. People always say, well, couldn't God use evolution? Well, first you've got to define what you mean by God, okay? Osama bin Laden believes in God, but he doesn't believe in the God of the Bible, that's for sure. A lot of Muslims, you know, a lot of Buddhists believe in God. It's not the God of the Bible. So, and then you got to define what you mean by evolution. I don't care, you know, if you believe dogs and wolves have a common ancestor, they would not prove dogs and bananas have a common ancestor, which was a rock 4.6 billion years ago. So, Catholics... I've got the data here somewhere. Here. Didn't the Pope accept evolution? 479, slide number 479. There. Okay. USA Today, October 25th, 1996, page 4A. Creationists denounce Pontiff's compromise, by Mary Beth Markaline. Pope John Paul II says he sees no conflict between religious teachings and the theory of evolution, but his statement was critiqued in some religious circles. In a message to the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, a group of 84 academicians that advises him, the Pope wrote this week, "Today, new knowledge leads to recognition of the theory of evolution as more than a hypothesis." Well, Pope, you know better now, I'm sure, you know, but since he died, now he's met the Creator himself, and now he knows. And he's saying, oops, that was a mistake. Should not have said that. Defenders of Charles Darwin's theory say the Pope's statement will reassure Christians who seek to reconcile their religious beliefs with their understanding of science. Oh, I can comment on each of these words in here. They're going to reconcile their understanding of science with their religious beliefs. I would say both are wrong. Both their religious beliefs and their understanding of science are incorrect. You don't observe dogs produce non-dogs. And it's got a whole article here about the Pope. There's some Catholic nun slash scientist slash educator. This was in Indianapolis Star of January 19th of 02. And she said on page F3, the nun scientist slash educator says, spirituality and science mesh. I would agree. Right? She sees no conflict, only a misunderstanding by those who know too little. In other words, if you don't agree with her, you're stupid. That's my translation. Okay, if you don't agree with her, you're stupid. She said, with her profound knowledge of the Bible, she cautions, if you're going to read the Bible as a book of science, you're in trouble. The people who believe this creationism myth, which is unscientific and is not in the Bible, despite what they say, haven't really studied theology and don't know that the Bible is not a scientific work. Okay, well, none who you are, you're absolutely, totally wrong, okay? The Bible does clearly teach a creation story. How would you interpret it, Albert, when God writes on a rock with his own finger and says, in 6 days, the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is? How would you interpret that?
That in 6 days, he did all that?
It's a no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
He did it all in 6 days. I mean, hello, Exodus 20:11. Oh, man. And when it says in Genesis that Eve is the mother of all living, and nothing died till Adam sinned, Romans 5, 1 Corinthians 15. If nothing died before Adam, and Eve was obviously his wife, mentioned numerous times in the Bible, then wouldn't you interpret that maybe they were the first couple and we all came from them?
Yeah, that's how I would see it.
Okay. So, the nun goes on to say, it's essential to read the Bible as a symbolic rather than literal text. In other words, we have to have her to interpret it for us. Okay, well, sorry, sister. I'm going to read it for myself. We'll be back, folks, in about a minute and a half. Join us on the other side. Welcome back, folks, to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Albert, live.
January 27th of 06.
Amen. Hey, we forgot to announce Bible Lands Cruise 2006. If you would like to go to the Bible Lands, this is quite a trip. I was on it once about 3 years ago and said, man, it took me 4 years as a Christian to get over there. It is unbelievable. As soon as you get off the boat in Israel, you feel like you belong, like it's home, and you've never been there before. It's strange, you know. You've been reading your Bible, reading about all these places, and all of a sudden, here you are looking at them, walking around where Jesus walked. Anyway, Bible Lands Cruise 2006. I don't know if it's on our website yet. It will be soon. I just got this today. But you might want to mark this on your calendar. October 31st, Halloween, through November 9th, 10 days. Is a cruise. We fly to Athens, Greece, tour the city of Athens and take a look at all the Bible stuff over there in Athens, and then go to Ephesus, where one of the first churches was started in Asia, and then to the island of Patmos, where John wrote the book of Revelation. And does they still got the cave where he wrote it in, you know, where he lived, a little bitty deserted island. Then we go down to Egypt to see the pyramids and the Sphinx and, you know, all the stuff in the Egypt plays heavily into the Bible. And then go to Jerusalem and see Galilee. And meanwhile, on the cruise ship in between, you've been on a cruise ship. You've never been off of Florida, have you?
No, I'm going, though.
Oh, man. Well, you got a couple choices here. You got all kinds of choices. Basically, the cost of the tour is about the same. The only thing that changes price radically is when you're on the ship, how big and fancy of a room do you want, okay? You want just a student room, one student by himself, $2,200 for the trip. You can go all the way up to $4,900.
Wow.
For the, you know, you want to drive the ship and be the captain and, you know, have everything. But an inside double means two of you together would be two students or two college-age guys in a room together. Of course, now, on the ship, it's very different. They'll have, like, 6 cafeterias open 24 hours a day. You can go anytime, day or night. I mean, they'll have the pizza place open. Just anytime. You walk in, and I'll take one of those. Okay.
Are meals included in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all meals included.
Really?
Yeah. And that's about $3,000. So I would say what you would want is about, you know, the $3,000 to go for 10 days. $300 a day. It includes all your travel, meals, first-class hotels. Bill Perkins puts this on at Compass International. He does the Stealing of the Mind conference 3 times a year that I go speak at. I think I got one coming up here soon. But, yeah, it's the ships are awesome. I've only been on cruise ship twice and loved it both times. Once we went down to Cozumel, my mom, when she was getting old, said, I want all my kids and all their families to go on a cruise. We said, Mom, we all got young kids. We can barely afford to pay the light bill. We're not going to go on a cruise. She said, no, I'm going to pay for it for everybody. So like a 4-day trip, 5-day, I think it was, drive to Miami. Gee whiz, what a long drive. 3 screaming kids in the car. They were screaming. But they were probably, no, I think mine were, a couple of them were married. Maybe all of them. Yeah, maybe all of them. Anyway, but they had the grandkids and all that. It was so fun. And my nephews and nieces. But we cruised down to Cozumel and then went scuba diving down there. Oh, unbelievable. And then cruise back. But the ship, they've got a guy comes on there and carves blocks of ice into fancy shapes, you know. And you can go in there and watch him with his, you know, knife and chisel. And he's cutting away. Made this massive eagle out of ice. They had that in Minnesota here every winter, too. But they're all melting today. They had ice competition and got up too warm yesterday. It's on the news. So if you want to go, here's some of the speakers on the cruise. You can listen to Frank Peretti. Frank Peretti is this guy. Do you see these 6 tapes here?
Yes.
You got to watch some of his stuff. He's hilarious, okay? Absolute genius. His one that he did on the chair, or he did one on called The Chart. He speaks at Compass a lot. I've gotten to know Frank pretty well. This does an amazing job. Then Dave Regan, Kent Hovind. Oh, he's going to be the best one, okay? Gary Frazier, Leo Giovanetti. I don't think I've ever met Leo. Chuck Missler is normally going, and I believe Bill said he's going but didn't get his name on the brochure.
When would be a good time to have the money ready or together?
Well, any time. Let's see. You can also stay an extra, after the cruise, stay an extra, 3 more days, and go down and see Petra, which is the massive fortress built on top of this hill that took the Roman army 3 years to conquer with only 900 soldiers up there. It's amazing. You can see the Red Sea and Jordan. Let's see, if you want to really enhance your Holy Land cruise, consider adding a few extra days to the end of your cruise. On the last Israel tour day, you'll disembark the ship with your luggage. At the end of the day, rather than returning to the ship, you'll spend the night in Jerusalem, only blocks from the old city. Next day, you'll spend the day touring awesome additional sites in Jerusalem. The following day, you'll travel to the Dead Sea and see Masada. That was incredible. The Dead Sea Scrolls area, and the Jericho, actually Masada's a fortress, and Petra's the rock, the place over in Jordan. We went over there and saw that too. Oh. That's great. And that's an extra $999, extra $1,000 to stay 3 more days. Boy, you know, it's all money, right?
Yeah.
You can't take it with you. But you can blow it all on stuff that doesn't matter to. Or you can go 3 days early to this cruise and tour Rome for another $999, $1,000. You can go see the Vatican, Circus Maximus, the Appian Way, the Parthenon, the Colosseum, Trevi Fountain, all kinds of stuff, the view of the 7 hills. Each night, choose another exquisite Italian restaurant to wind down your day. Italians know how to cook. Now, World War II showed they weren't real good fighters, okay? But boy, do they know how to cook. Man, I was over there in Sicily, in Italy, Naples, spoke over there. Oh, I'm not doing the pre or the post, okay? 10 days is long enough for me. I'm swamped with all I got to do around here. But if you want to do that, there you go. You can sign up on our website. If you want to go as part of my group, where you get to we talk about creation and cruise along, it'd be great if we had a couple of skeptics or scoffers or atheists come along and just get 10 days to convert them. I guarantee I could convert them in 10 days if they're honest. if they're, you know, already committed and, you know, if they're actually not honest, open scientists, but, you know, committed zealots to their cause, you know, fundamentalists, evolutionist fundamentalists, maybe can't help them. Okay, anyway, that's the details on the trip. Where'd we leave off? Oh, you can get a hold of us on the program, 877-479-DINO, extension 136. This Catholic nun says, people who believe in creation is a myth, which is unscientific and not in the Bible, despite what they say, haven't really studied theology and don't know that the Bible is not a scientific work. This lady needs her head examined, okay? She says it's essential to read the Bible as a symbolic text, which means that the 7 days in which the world was created represent development over a long period of time, not days as we know them. Lady, think about it, okay? Here you are telling the people that are listening to you that the 7 days are not 7 days, and yet on the third day, God made the grass, the plants, and the trees. On the fourth day, he made the sun. How long do trees, where's this lady from? How long do trees survive with no sun where you're from? Albert, how about you? How long do trees survive where you're from with no sunlight?
Not very long.
No, a couple days.
Yeah.
Trees maybe a week or two, you know. I think during Noah's flood, probably a lot of trees actually survived. I wouldn't argue about, you know, trees surviving, no problem. But, well, there, okay. Let me get this where to work. Okay. She needs to come to my seminar. Come on, right there. Ooh, next button. Okay. And, you know, in 1244 A.D., the Catholic Church under Pope John the 22nd established a practice of selling indulgences. Pope Leo the 10th in 1475 published the list of indulgences. Now, here's what indulgences means. You can pay them some money and then go ahead and sin, okay? But it's paid for because you gave them money. If you rob a church, you have to pay $2.25. If you burn a house, you have to pay $2.75. If you kill a layman, that's $1.75. For forgery and lying, $2. Eating meat in Lent, $2.75. Ooh, no, that's a serious one. Man. For ravishing a virgin, $2. For striking a priest, $2.75. Ooh, wow. For robbery, $3. Keeping a priest as a mistress, $2.25. Boom. We'll cover that in video 7. Okay, folks, we'll be back. Take your questions right after the break. Stay with us at Dr. Dino Live. Welcome back, folks, to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Albert live.
January 27th of 06.
27th, man. Normally I'm gone on Fridays or something a lot of times, but I'm here. This is great. I'm speaking in town, actually 40 miles away this weekend. So I'm loving it up in Jay, Florida. Okay, and you can join us on the program, 877-479-DINO, extension 136, or instant messages, Dr. Dino Live. And we love telling people where we stand because we don't want to sneak up on anybody. We believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory being taught in our schools in violation of the First Amendment is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. Or who you got on the phone there, Albert?
David from Washington State.
David from Washington. Yes, sir, David. Go ahead.
I was wondering if God can know time, he knows what's going to be in the present, what's in the future, and what was in the past, he's not stuck in time. Then why does he have emotion?
Well, you can know something's going to happen and still feel bad about it. I can see people, you know, like I see people that are taking drugs, and you know right where that lifestyle is going to lead. I've got some family members, you know, get into drugs and just, oh, he's like, man, you're going to wreck your life. You're going to lose everything. And it just, you know, it hurts. But, yeah, you can still have emotions and know what's going to come. I guess I don't see a conflict there. Is that what you're thinking? Since God already knows, why would he be emotional about it?
No, just that. I'm 12 years old, and I went with my brother to college. I was with him in astronomy class.
Right.
And the teacher asked that question.
Usually when they ask a question like that, it is sarcastic, and the question is designed to raise doubts about, you know, how can God exist? Aha, can he make a rock so big he can't lift it? You know, those kind of questions. They're not really looking to teach the students anything other than to raise doubts about their faith.
And I had one more question.
Sure.
Is the The teacher was saying something about the sun burning on nuclear fusion.
It has never been proven how the sun burns. That is an assumption that may be correct. Either way, if the sun's burning with nuclear fusion or gravitational collapse is the other major contender. Either way, it puts a time limit. It just puts a bigger time limit with nuclear fusion.
If it's burning with nuclear fusion, then it's going to get bigger.
And where's this material coming from?
I don't know. That's what I asked him. He said, well, it's found in the textbook.
Just because it's found in a textbook, I don't care. You know, where's this material coming? People say, well, you know, how do you know the sun's always been shrinking? Well, duh, it's burning. If you had a fire burning in your yard, and I said, now you keep watching it, pretty soon, that wood pile that's burning in there is going to get bigger and bigger. You'd say, hello, you live on this planet? You know, son, fires don't get bigger. The fire might burn bigger for a while as it burns up the fuel, but the fuel pile's not going to get bigger and bigger. And the sun's flames might be getting bigger and bigger. You know, the sun does, it's called oscillate. It's bigger and then gets smaller and then bigger and then smaller. You know, that's no big deal, and it's pretty well understood why that happens. But the general trend is the sun is shrinking. It has to be unless new material is being sucked in from outer space someplace, and that is not being observed. So tell them to call into my radio program. I would question that one.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Good. What part of California are you in, David? Or Washington, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. My sister lives up in Puyallup, Washington.
I was on the conference that was in Asia.
Okay. Good.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye. Call anytime. Thanks a lot, David. Bye. All right, folks, you can join us on the program. 877-479-DINO. They're laughing at me, Albert. I'm sitting here in the vibrator chair, you know, and my staff is coming through laughing at me. Here I am. I work hard all day. Well, hard would be a stretch, okay? I work a little bit once in a while.
I worked pretty hard today.
You did, yeah. It actually worked today, didn't you?
Yeah, it wasn't easy. And I don't really like roofs either.
Don't?
No.
Afraid of heights?
No, it's not afraid of heights. It's hitting the ground.
Well, yeah, if you fall, it doesn't hurt. When you
no,
stop falling,
that's when it hurts.
That's going to hurt, yeah. But it'll feel better when it quits hurting. Okay. But the ground will break your fall. It did mine.
Every time.
Oh, yeah, every time. Okay, questions in at Dr. Dino Live, or that's AOL Instant Message, Dr. Dino Live, or Instant Messages, that was Instant Message, or phone, 877-479-DINO, extension 136. Here we go, please, Marsupial 03 writes in, Dr. Hovind, who does the funny drawings that are seen in your videos? Ooh, I have a wide range of people who have artistic talents that do those things. Sometimes I'll be at somebody's house or at the church, and they'll say, oh, hey, I'm an artist. I say, well, great. Can you draw me a picture of something? And I'll just, you know, because I've got a whole list of ideas I would like to be, you know, illustrated. Being a teacher, I guess, it is obvious to me that the picture, you know, says 1,000 words. If you can show somebody a picture while you're talking about it, it just drives home the point. And I talk fast anyway. So in my 18-and-a-half-hour seminar, we can cover a huge amount of material because there are so many pictures. It's irrefutable. And what happened to the evolutionists? Every time I show them a picture about a petrified tree standing up, running through the rock layers, and say, guys, how does this happen? They go on to a new subject. How do you get a petrified tree extending through these rock layers? Go to drdino.com and look at polystrate fossils, and you will see it. Okay, marsupial, funny drawing, so I would have to say a lot of different artists. Please comment. Okay, who's on the phone there, Albert, before I go to the next one?
Joel from Milwaukee.
Joel from Milwaukee, yes, sir. I'm coming up to Milwaukee here soon.
Yeah, I noticed in your schedule you're coming to McGonigal, I believe. That's pretty close.
Actually, I'm coming up there 2 or 3 times this year to Milwaukee area.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I was at your seminar at UWM.
Okay.
And talked to you a little bit there. But yeah, it's gotten a little bit warmer since I last talked to you a couple weeks ago.
Hey, now what happened to all the professors? Wasn't about like 100 professors were invited to debate me and they all refused?
I don't know because I don't go to that school.
Now, the guys who set it up, you know, they called everybody in any field that might even be remotely related. I mean, philosophy professors, biology, botany. They do teach evolution, but in front of their, in front of their class.
Yep.
They don't want to take on a lowly high school science teacher.
I guess not.
Anyway, what's up, Joel?
Anyways, I got a question about Stonehenge. I remember you talking about that during your seminar, but it's been a while since I've heard stuff about it.
Okay.
When was that created again?
Oh, I don't know that anybody knows for sure.
Okay.
One theory would be that Stonehenge was made after the flood by some really smart people who were trying to either preserve some kind of knowledge to pass on to their kids. All of the theories about Stonehenge would fit into two basic categories. One category would be it's got some kind of, you know, godly significance, or secondly, it's got some kind of heathen significance.
Yeah.
Either one, though, could include just plain astronomy. But why would they study this star? It appears that it was built to line up with certain stars or, you know, at this summer solstice, the longest day of the year. George Dodwell, the Australian astronomer, studied the shadows of Stonehenge and Edixis and Amun-Ra and all these ancient observations and said, the Earth is wobbled because when their observation point was made, it would have lined up with the sun. Today it does not, indicating the Earth itself has wobbled around. The North Pole has moved. Well, I think most people would agree that the North Pole has shifted around some. So I cover that in video number 6.
Yeah, I remember. Well, there's also, you know, as you said in your videos, there's two North Poles, the magnetic North Pole and the real North Pole. But it's still extremely interesting how people even built Stonehenge, just like the pyramids in Egypt, how it all just lines up to, like, pretty much worship the sun, I guess, or do stargazing or whatever it was.
Well, see, worshiping the sun is very different than just plain studying the sun.
Yeah.
Astronomy, the study of stars, is fine. Astrology, the worship of the stars, or, you know, fear that if you're born under a certain star, you know, something bad will happen to you. That's just flat stupid. Astrology is, but astronomy is fine. So I don't know if a Stonehenge had to do with astronomy or astrology or maybe none of the above. Maybe it's just a big pile of rocks so they could have their parties inside or something. You know?
Yeah. And, yeah, I also was watching something very interesting on PBS.
Okay.
And they were talking about when Jesus was actually born. And one guy went back and looked at the records and said that Jesus was born like April 17th of 7 BC or something like that. It's just extremely interesting how he even went back like that.
Now, was he basing that on the assumption that the star of Bethlehem was actually an alignment of several planets that makes it get brighter? Like if Jupiter, Mars, and Saturn line up, which happens once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, then it's a whole lot brighter.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how he did that, but I think he did it by a comet passing through the sky. That's how he pinpointed it.
So the guys were following a comet. Here's the problem with that. By the time they found Jesus, he was 2 years old.
Yeah.
You know, you got all the stories of Christmas with the shepherds coming and the wise men coming at the same time. Well, that's baloney. The shepherds came the night he was born. The wise guys came 2 years later, okay? By then, Jesus was already two. They were no longer living in the cave or wherever Jesus was born in the stable. They were living in a house. Apparently, Joseph could not afford to get his family back to Nazareth, and so he just went to work doing carpentry work right there where he was. The wise men came to the house, not to the manger.
Yeah.
They need to read their Bible.
Very true.
So I doubt a comet's going to last 2 years in the sky.
Yeah.
I don't know. You might want to look on the internet and see what's the longest any comet's ever lasted. I have no clue, but I would guess it's going to be something less than a month.
Yeah. I remember a couple of years ago when Hale-Bopp went through the sky. It was a month or maybe even 2 months at the longest. But I know they were predicting it to come by, and then, you know, it went by in like a month or something like that.
Sure. Yeah, it's not going to last 2 years, that's for sure. So if these wise men took off from their country to follow this star, and 2 years later arrived, and things still hanging over Bethlehem, it's not a comet. That's why I wondered, what's he basing his date of April 17th, you know, 7 BC. Now, he might have the correct date, but not for those reasons.
Yeah.
Make sense?
Yeah, I don't doubt that Jesus was born probably, you know, between like 4 to 7 BC.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way to know, but probably this is actually, instead of 2006, this is probably more like 2013 or 14, you know.
Well, it doesn't really matter now. All that matters is that, you know, we just follow God's law and know that his son died for us and spend all eternity with him.
Yep. Hey, when I come back to Wisconsin, see if you can get some of those heathen up there to have a debate. Why is it they want to stand in front of their class and talk about evolution where they have a pretty obvious academic and psychological advantage?
Yeah.
It won't take on a lowly high school science teacher.
I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine.
I think the bop, hits it pretty close.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
All right, have a good night.
Hey, call anytime. Bye. All right, folks, our one lonely phone line's open. When Albert gets it hung up, he's got it. All right, 877-479-DINO, extension 136, and or 850-479-DINO, extension 136. Here we go. Please comment on one theory down. Dinosaur's bizarre appendage still puzzles. It showed the picture of the Parasaurolophus on livescience.com/animalworld/bunch of numbers. Okay. One theory down, Dino's bizarre appendage still puzzles, by Bjorn Carey. The massive hollow crests that protrude like bananas from atop the heads of duck-billed dinosaurs did not help their sense of smell, as previously believed. The new study doesn't quite rule out some of the more outlandish theories. No, we'll finish this when we get done with the call. Calls come first. Oh, yes, sir. Albert, who's on the phone there?
Travis from Michigan.
Travis, yes, sir. Is it snowing up there?
It's actually melting away. It's about 52 out right now, and here in Elk Rapids is where I'm at.
Man, you got a heat wave up there.
Yeah, I love it, too. I hope all the snow goes away.
Good. What's up,
but, yes, I got a question. I was actually asking you last night about it, but I caught you at the end of the show.
Okay.
I was asking you about a heartogram.
I don't know what that is.
Well, are you, you have an internet in front of you at all?
Right in front of me.
All right. If you do a Google search and do heartogram, H-E-A-R-T-A-G-R-A-M.
Google. Okay, dead air. I'm moving my computer over. So I have a little better access to it. H-E-A, I have a laptop. H-E-A-R-T.
What's the rest? H-E-A-R-T-A-G-R-A-M.
A-G-R-A-M. Heartogram.
Yep.
Got it. Okay, about 1 million hits on Heartogram. Okay. Kind
of
like this.
Should be a couple pictures or a couple images of one, maybe?
Yeah, it looks like the inverted pentagram that the top, instead of a star upside down, the top two make it look like a heart. Okay, got it.
Yeah, do you think that is considered a satanic symbol or not?
Well, symbols.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I wear it on my hat, and I have it on my hat. I'm pretty religious, and I don't think it's satanic or anything, but...
Well, it says here, the heartogram was originally created as a logo by the self-described love metal band. Mm-hmm. So I guess you'd have to look and see, you know, if they made it up, then they have the right to decide what it means.
Right on.
So you'd have to look at that. Combines a heart with a pentagram.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. according to band members, it represents the juxtaposition of love and hate slash anger, or life and death. The symbol is sported as a tattoo by many HIM fans, H-I-M, whatever that is, including professional skater and Jackass stuntman Bam Margera.
Mm-hmm.
A similar-looking symbol with heart and triangle interlaced is sometimes worn as a decorative embellishment of the Star of David. That's all it says about it. Hmm. Well... You know, you could get some friends together and decide, okay, when we hold up our middle finger and wave at each other, that's our symbol for I love you, okay?
Uh-huh.
But most of the world's not going to take it that way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, somebody could decide, well, hey, this symbol means this to me. Okay, but it's kind of important. How does the rest of the world perceive this? Does that make sense?
Yeah. You know, I got it on my truck, and I got a little hat that's got the same thing on there, and sometimes people give me the weird look for it. No,
well,
it's symbol of love and hate, not satanic, I'm sorry.
Well, how about just the love and forget the hate part?
Yeah.
I would not want to combine it. Combining it with the inverted pentagram, I would certainly be against that. Now, the inverted pentagram has for centuries been used to mean, you know, witchcraft.
Yeah.
Okay. I have...
Many years. I was just actually studying that here earlier today online.
When you get into symbols, it's pretty amazing. Some of the symbolism used, like in the Masonic Lodge or in the Catholic Church. You can look
at... find that a lot in the Illuminati, too.
Oh, look at almost any statue in a Catholic Church. They're holding out two fingers. They're holding two fingers together now, like this.
Yep.
That's symbolism behind that, okay? It's all part of a satanic cult. Now, the average person in it probably doesn't have a clue that they're in that, okay? But that's
now, putting up your index finger and your middle finger is a satanic symbol. There is a Bohemian Grove, and it's the same thing as President Bush is it.
Yes. I've got a friend of mine. I won't reveal his name because he works there at Bohemian Grove.
Really?
Yeah. And is gathering all kinds of interesting information on a long-term project.
His name wouldn't be Alex Jones from InfoWars.com.
No, but I've never met Alex Jones. I would like to meet the guy, you know.
I'll see if I can make a phone call and talk to him again and see if I can maybe get you on the air over there.
Yeah, well, we got a break here, but I'd love to be on his program sometime.
Okay.
Hey, thanks a lot. Call in anytime.
Right, thank you very much.
All right, folks, we'll be back in about a minute and a half. Join us on the other side. Thanks a lot. There we go. That's up to it. Good evening, folks. Welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Albert sleeping over there on the Jeff. First time we caught you sleeping, Albert. Here we are live. What is this?
January 27th of 06.
Of 06. And we're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory being taught in our schools in violation of the First Amendment is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. And if you believe you came from Iraq, we're here to help. We have the technology. We can do it. You can call us at 877-479-DINO, 877-479-3466, and go to extension 136. Our one lonely phone line is open, ready for your calls. Or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive. And we'll take your questions and comments here as we have several coming in. Let's see, where do we leave off here? Marsupial, we did that. Strange appendages on the dinosaur's head. Comment on the strange appendages. They're talking about the... I got the wrong one now, Albert. I got to go back to the one I had before. Live science. Looks like I'm going to have to click all these buttons all over again. Oh, well, life is rough, and then you die. Get used to it, right? That's what it's going to be. Okay. You tell your kids that someday. Son, that's just tough. That's the way it is, right? Get used to it. Here we go. One theory down. Dino's bizarre appendage still puzzles. It showed a picture of a Parasaurolophus. They got a big, long, banana-shaped bump on the back of their head. And they're trying to figure out what this thing's for, right? There have been lots of theories over the years, Albert, proposed about what this parasaur thing was for on the back of their head. One theory is that it was, to be able to call louder. You know, hello, honey, I'm sorry, you know, can I come home for dinner kind of stuff. Or another theory is that it was, part of their sinus cavities for going underwater, storing air. I happen to believe that it may have been involved in chemical storage to be the fire-breathing dragon. I covered that on our videotape, Leviathan, the fire-breathing dragon. If you read Job 41 in the Bible, just before Psalms, there really was a fire-breathing dragon, and that would be the way to do it. Hydrochloric acid or hydroquinones. any number of chemicals, like John does. Did you see John do the experiment out here where he made the hydrogen gas with aluminum and hydrochloric acid and blew the can up? The kids love it. You know, they blow the can sky high. Oh, I'll blow stuff up. Yeah, that's cool. My brother decided he was going to kill a raccoon down in the tree. My brother was like 12. Down in this tree in the woods in our backyard in Illinois, had this raccoon lived in it. My brother, the big game hunter, Daniel Boone fan, 12 years old. And had the coonskin cap. He wanted to make a coonskin cap is what he wanted. He took 640 firecrackers, unrolled them, took all the gunpowder out, and put it in a section of bamboo from an old fishing rod. Stuck a plug in the end with a fuse in it, jammed this gunpowder in, 640 firecrackers. and he was pounding a tack in to hold the cork in when it went off in his hand. Broke every single bone in his hand. All the little bones in there, broke them all. Still, his middle fingernail never did grow back. It's still gone today. You know, he's 50, what, 6 years old. Still can't bend his thumb. You do dumb things as a kid, and you carry the scars the rest of your life. You got the one on your forehead, right?
Yes, okay. I do.
Okay. So anyway, the fire-breathing dragon, how do we get off on all that? I believe there are numerous chemicals you can put together and get this type of reaction, okay, fire-breathing dragon. The bombardier beetle does this with hydroquinones and hydrogen peroxide. About 28%, I believe, hydrogen peroxide. The stuff you buy at Walmart is going to be like 3%. Which, by the way, I brush my teeth with hydrogen peroxide.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah, it kills every germ. It's amazing. After you're done brushing your teeth, put hydrogen peroxide in, swirl it around, just open up and look in the mirror and see if it's fizzing or bubbling. Those are the germs you missed. It'll tell you. Doesn't taste bad. I wouldn't swallow it, you know, but... Okay. So David Evans reconstructed the brain cavity of a herbivorous lambeosaur, also known as the cows of the Cretaceous period, creating the first ever cast of the dino's brain, which was about the size of your fist. Lambeosaurs roamed the planet from 85 million to 65 million years ago. Nah, he's wrong. But they're trying to figure out what this thing was for on the back of their head. Might have been decoration. You know, whatever. Okay. Well, we'll get back to that in a minute. Phone calls come first. Who's on the phone there, Albert?
Nobody.
That was Glenda?
No. No, some guy wanted to know how long the show was going to be on for.
Oh, I thought my secretary was going to call in again. She was threatening
to. She was threatening to.
Yeah, that's fine. We handle callers from, you know, radical to extreme all the time. We can handle it. Well, anyway, that's my comment is nobody seems to know for sure. It looks like even after studying and making a cast of these things, they still don't know for sure what it was for. I would say... I don't know either, but you know, possibly the fire-breathing dragon is certainly an option. Okay, Duke Guru 716 writes in, you said that there are 300 known supernovas, and the one happens about every 30 years, which is 9,000 years. Do you think that about 100 of those were caused when God stretched forth the heavens? I don't know. You know, if we observe one every 30 years, and probably people have only been keeping records of that type of thing for, you know, a few hundred, maybe 1,000 years, we could assume that there maybe were more or less at some time in the past, but the number wouldn't be radically different. So to get 9,000 years worth of supernovas is perfectly reasonable. Perfectly reasonable. Okay, I got PowerPoint open. There we go. As far as supernovas, I cover this on video number 7. And the new video 7 should be available. They just got it all done today, or yesterday or today. They're working on like another couple days. It's going to go off to to press, and then they'll make a bunch of them and go in the inventory. So if you want the new 2005 edition, you do get that when you order our tapes now, but stuff is number 7. Okay, Institute for Creation Research, ICR, had an article in 1998 about supernovas, and they're the ones that said about every 30 years a star dies, and the universe has less than 300 dead supernovas. So, go to icr.org for more on that if you want to get stuff on supernovas. It just is interesting that there aren't billions of these things if the universe is billions of years old. I did the math on this, Albert. Hubble Telescope reports came out that there are 70 sextillion stars. You got million, billion, trillion, quadrillion, quintillion, sextillion, septillion, octillion, novillion. Who cares, okay? 70 sextillion stars.
Aren't those just the ones that we can view?
That we know about.
Yeah.
We don't even know about the ones we don't know about, if you can imagine that.
Yeah.
And if they say the universe is 20 billion years old, which is generous, there should be 6.5 million new stars per minute. Every minute, 6.5 million new stars. And nobody has a clue how any one star can form. All right, who's on the phone there, Albert?
David from California.
Yes, David, go ahead.
Hey, Owen. Hey, by the way, what happened to Jonathan?
He got married 3 months ago, and his wife wants him home for supper at 5 o'clock. So
really?
I warned him that the ring only looks like it's on the finger. It's actually in the nose.
Wow,
and
how
it's
funny.
Come with me, dear.
So he's not going to be your co-host anymore?
Oh, yeah, once in a while, sure.
Okay. Hey, I had a question for you. By the way, you read the Bible on e-read or something, right? On your
I read it all kinds of ways. Sometimes I just sit and study one verse. Sometimes I study a topic. Yeah. Sometimes it just breeze through 100 chapters at one time.
Yeah, but I heard you said that there's a program you use that you allows you to read it to you, like.
Yeah, we produced it here at our ministry. We took the Bible on King James Version with Alexander Scorby, and put it on double speed.
Cool.
You can get it on CD.
Cool. I had a question. If I were to ask you the question, can God be seen, what would you say, according to what you've read?
According to Scripture, there appears to be a few times when he allowed himself or part of himself to be seen, or he took on the form of a man.
Okay.
He, just like angels could take on the form of a person, I think we are too locked into the physical world and think, you know, our interpretation is the only interpretation, but, you know, God can apparently materialize if he wishes. So I would give that, can God be seen? Okay. I would give it a yes if he so chooses.
Okay. Well, do you have a computer in front of you?
I do.
Do you go to John 1, verse 18?
No man has seen God at any time?
Yeah.
Okay.
So according, is that literally true, would you say?
John 1, 18. No man hath seen God at any time, the only begotten Son, which is in the bosom of the Father, he hath declared him. Well, to say no one has seen God, does that mean no one has seen all of God? You know, because Moses only saw the back part.
Yeah. Wait, did you know the verse before you even...
Yes.
Really? That's impressive.
I read that book a lot.
Wow, that's...
Really and I believe it.
Okay, so you think that he really wasn't seen, he didn't know someone was seen?
Well, yes. I think, you know, people can see parts. They saw the hand of God right on the wall in Nebuchadnezzar, but does that mean they saw God? Well, technically, no.
Okay. And can you go to Exodus 33, verse 11?
Okay.
Read that.
Exodus. it's quicker for me to go through chapter at a time. Exodus 33. Oop, not too far. One chapter back. My Bible program just does four verses at a time.
Yeah.
Okay. And the Lord spake unto Moses face to face, as a man speaketh unto his friend. And he turned again into the camp. But his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, departed not out of the tabernacle.
Yeah.
I believe if you read this whole passage, God spoke to Moses out of a cloud, which was two verses earlier.
Oh, okay. I might be wrong about that.
Well, you can speak to someone face-to-face, but still not actually, you could be 6 inches away in a dense fog, and still not see them.
And one more verse, if we could.
Okay.
Genesis 32, verse 30.
Yeah, Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I've seen God face-to-face, and my life is preserved.
You have that by heart?
Yes.
Wow, that is so impressive, I have to say. But do you see what I'm getting at? How, at least at face value, if these are both literally true, it really can't. Because if no one has seen him, but then there's verses that say he hasn't seen him. No,
sure. I do understand. And this supposed contradiction has been brought up for centuries and been well answered. Yeah, there's on my website, Dr. Dino, there's 90 pages of answers to supposed Bible contradictions, including this one.
Yeah.
You can read it. Now, is this sufficient, though, for you to therefore reject the whole book?
No.
Okay. See, Aristotle, 400 years before Christ, very wisely said, you know, if there's a conflict between, a person wants to argue with a document, of course the document cannot defend itself, you know, the benefit of the doubt goes to the document, not to the critic.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's only fair, because the document can't say, well, here's what I really meant, you know.
Well, you at least want so there is an answer. Is it summing up or no?
There would be an answer. What now?
You said that this is an answer, right?
It, many times. That is answered on my website, Dr. Dino, on the 90 pages of contradictions.
But, so is the answer that you can only see part of them, not all of them?
I think that's one possible. I think there are probably six or seven possible answers to this. I mean, and they do this all the time in police work. They look at, you know, forensics. Well, how could John kill George when he was in Hawaii, you know? And sometimes what appears at first to be a contradiction actually is not. I mean, that's quite obvious to anybody in police work. You gotta...
Oh, yeah, yeah. But you have to admit that the statement, for example, you know, in Genesis where God's walking around, he's like, where are you? And, you know, Adam is hiding from him.
Right.
Because, I mean, presumably Adam saw
Well, it may be, or it may be, you know, like the bright,
well, I mean, but
like a bright light.
Well, that's true, but what I mean is, what you're doing is neat. Well, I mean, if we're going to think about it literally, I think it's safe to say that this is a toxic, isn't it?
Well, have you ever seen like Star Trek where the bright light appears and starts talking, you know, and they don't actually see the person, but they see the light, they see the form maybe of a person, but they don't see the person. And would you say they talk to the person face to face? Well, sure, they do.
Okay. Will you at least admit that you're invoking a little bit of imagination in this picture of the apparent contradiction?
Well, I would say if there are four or five possible explanations, or six or seven, however many there are, for this, by Aristotle's dictum, the benefit of the doubt would go to the document and say, well, the critic has not proven his point. He's brought up an interesting, you know, observation that may or may not have a clear, quick answer.
Okay, what would count as a, like, if the Bible said 2 plus 2 is 5, and then the next day 2 plus 2 is 4, like what would count?
To me, that would certainly count. I don't know of any places like that you can find in the Bible, but
well, what if I could find where it says, you know, God's name is jealous, but then it says God is love. I mean, would that be sufficient or no?
Well, I think you probably also have all of those same character traits. Should we say, you know, David is smart. Well, that might depend on which subject, you know.
Yeah. Evolution. I'm an idiot, right?
Well, I don't know. You know. Everybody's ignorant, just on different topics.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, according to the Bible, I'm also a fool and wicked and all that other stuff, right?
Well, did I ever meet you? Did you come to a seminar or a debate one time?
Yeah, I went in L.A.
That's right. Okay, I remember talking to you. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, oh, by the way, I heard you're going to be in California soon. Is that right?
I believe so. I don't have my calendar, but I travel a lot. But
yeah, a friend of mine looked it up, and I might come to the church and see you and, do that again.
Hey, you are welcome anytime. Get with the host of whoever's having me out there, and if you're interested, I'll take you out to dinner, and we'll sit down.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, because whenever I first started calling, you said that if you're ever in California, Jonathan said he'd buy me a Frosty or something. But in either case, okay, so one more lesson. So something that would convince you would be something that is very, very strict is 2 plus 2 is 5 and 2 plus 2 is 4.
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, I would like to, any supposed contradictions, see, I would start with the opposite assumption of you. I would start with the assumption the book is right and I must be interpreting it wrong. Whereas you've already started with the assumption, hey, the book is wrong and I don't like this book.
Well, I wouldn't say it's an assumption. There's several reasons why I don't think it's true. But again, I wanted to ask you about Psalm 14. Like, you know, Psalm 14, the fool has said intelligence unto God. Da 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 da.
Right.
What do you think of the part that says, and none hath done good?
I believe you could say very clearly that there isn't one single person on the planet that is good.
Well, I know, but it says, but none has done good. None has done any good.
There's none that doeth good, no, not one. There's none that seeketh after righteousness. They've all gone out of the way. They're together become unprofitable. There's none that doeth good, no, not one. Yeah, Romans 3 reiterates that same list.
Well, I know, but do you think that's true?
If our righteousnesses are as filthy rags in God's eyes, even the good things we do look bad to Him. See, that's a comparative thing.
I see.
None to do with good compared to Him.
So whenever it says the fool or the atheist, basically, none of the atheists is really also could mean it's only. So you're saying that this verse could apply to anyone?
Oh, yeah. Me too. Yeah. Me especially. Hey, David, we got a break here. You're welcome to hang on. We'll be back in about a minute.
Okay, I will.
All right. Back in about a minute, folks. Other side. Bye-bye. Welcome back, folks, to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Awesome Albert, live.
January 27th of 06.
We believe the Bible is true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. And you can join us at 877-479-DINO, extension 136. We have David on the phone still, right? Yes, sir, David. All right. You realize if you keep calling in, we're going to get you converted.
Yeah. Well, if that's true, then I guess I'll be happy about that, right?
Yeah, I know you'll be happy about that for a long time.
Yeah, because I have a lot of questions for this Bible God. But hey, Psalm 14. So the verse actually is could apply to everybody, even though it distinguishes out people who say there's no God.
Sure. I think we've all gone out of the way. We're all wicked, which is why we all need a Savior. The only difference between you and me We're both wicked sinners, except mine are forgiven, yours are not.
Well, I mean, but do you really think that it's fair to say that you've never done good, or none have done just good?
Well, compared to God, that would absolutely be correct.
Really?
It's a comparison thing, you know. Like when you say, would you say an ant is tall? You might find one ant that's bigger than the rest, but compared to a human, I mean, no. No ants are tall. You know what I mean?
Well, then, you know, then don't you find it curious? Why would the Bible make the distinction that atheists, why would it take on atheists if it applies to anybody?
Well, clearly it applies to, when God gave the Ten Commandments to Moses, the commandments were to be a mirror. Hey, look at this. Here's the list. Here's what I want. Don't lie. Don't cheat. Don't steal. Don't commit adultery. Don't take my name in vain. Don't hate anybody. Blah, blah, blah.
Don't work on Sunday.
They should have looked at that and said, wow, we can't do that. God, be merciful. And it's okay. That's what I wanted.
But how do you feel about the Fourth Commandment?
Well, the Sabbath? Interesting one. I think it's been expanded now where all 7 days belong to God.
Hold on. Where did that come from?
I didn't say you don't work on all 7 days.
I know, but Exodus 20, verse 6, very specific, right?
Right.
You know, the 7 days of work, and the, I'm sorry, 6 days of work, and the 7 days, you get a chill. Right?
Sure. Look at Exodus 31, and it says very clearly that those commandments were given to the children of Israel. Nehemiah chapter 9 says God revealed the Sabbath to Moses on Mount Sinai. That's 2,500 years later.
Well, so then, I thought the standard. I thought that all of us were compared, or all of us have to meet the standard, not just Israelites or whatever.
Well, if you're going to try to go to heaven by meeting the standard of God's law, good luck. You'll be the first one in the history of the world.
Well, I know that, but you know who Great Comfort is?
Oh yeah, good friend of mine.
Yeah. You know his whole trip about he basically convinces you that going to hell because you haven't obeyed the commandments, you know?
Well, I think it's obvious. If you look at the Ten Commandments, there isn't a person on this planet who could say, I have obeyed all of those.
Okay, well, what do you think? I'll leave it as it is. Also, I want to ask you a question about this. This thing on the lines of, you know, assume the book is true or give the benefit of the doubt, something like that.
Right.
How did you word that again?
Aristotle said, let's see, what's the exact wording? Look, when a critic is discussing a document, the benefit of the doubt goes to the document, not to the critic. Wording to that effect. It's called Aristotle's dictum. You can look it up on internet.
So you're saying that we should go with the presupposition that that was true until we're convinced otherwise?
Correct.
Are you consistent when you apply that to other whole books, for example?
Sure.
What about? I'm assuming you've been to a market where you see those magazines that say, you know, Bill Clinton gave birth to an alien. Right? I mean, so you're saying that we should assume they're true until we investigate these claims?
Well, that may be an extreme example.
Well, not really, because if we're going to be consistent in this principle, then we should assume all that we are exposed to is true until we actually investigate it, which seems like it should be the other way around.
Well, actually, we already have quite a bit of information in our head over the years. Hopefully over the years that grows larger, the amount of knowledge you have, that you can automatically filter things through as they come in.
In that case, then couldn't we hold the Bible through that same filter?
Oh, yeah, sure. And everything I've seen, I run the Bible through that filter all the time, and I've not seen a contradiction.
Well, not the contradictions, but when you crack it open and it talks about, you know, talking donkeys, whales and burning bushes and spirits,
sure,
and ghosts.
Oh yeah.
I mean, most people who have gone to school, I mean, would probably just count this as just another mythological book that, you know, has an historical significance in our history,
Many people do reject it, no question. That's their prerogative.
Well, what I mean is, but if we're going to use something about the lines of we use our filters to automatically discount something that's false, such as the magazine, right?
Well, when it says Bill Clinton gives birth to an alien, right away I would say, maybe with Bill Clinton you've got a point there. Let's pick somebody else, okay?
Well, you're saying since men don't give birth, that would be a reason to doubt, right?
Right.
And so would you say that that's a reason to reject it outright?
Well,
I would say so.
I would say the burden of proof would be on the magazine author at that point to prove this happened, document it. If you can prove it, hey, I want to see it.
Do you think that it's fair to discounted as false merely because there's no way that as far as we know, men can give birth. Like, that
well,
alone.
Sure, the same thing about a donkey talking or something like that, right?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, so couldn't the same principle be used to say, well, you know, virgins don't give birth, that can't be, therefore discount it outright.
You could, and you could certainly do that.
But am I justified in doing so? Is it? Do you think it's reasonable to do so?
From human reason, yes. But then you got to throw God into this. Can God cause this to happen?
Well, according to you, then the Bill Clinton thing can happen too.
Well, sure.
Right?
Well,
you see my point?
Well, can God create from nothing? All of a sudden, you have something where before there was nothing, and He didn't rearrange materials. He created.
I know, but if you're saying that it's reasonable, it's okay. Just now, I asked you a couple questions, and you said something about you basically gave a criteria to discount something as false outright if it violates something that we know to be true, such as no give birth.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you said that the same criteria could be used in the Bible, and then you also mentioned that it would be reasonable to do so. So if that's the case, then why would I be going to hell for something that why do you think God would send people to hell for something that you agree is reasonable
disbelief? You don't go to hell because of rejecting Christ or doubting His word. You go to hell because you're a sinner.
Okay. Well.
The fact that there's a cure available almost is unrelated.
Yeah, I know, but what I'm saying is, it's a sin to doubt, isn't it? Well, I mean, it's a sin to hold. It's a sin to blasphemy or not accepting the doctrine. Those are sins, right?
Right.
Well, so then there you go. So I am. I mean, so by your own admission, being reasonable in this case is a sin, and therefore results in eternal damnation. Right?
Yes, I understand what you're saying. Well, I understand what you're saying, and that's where God has said, you know, he that believeth on him must believe that he is, and that he's, you know, you have to come by faith. That's where I quickly admit that I take purely on faith the idea of the virgin birth.
Okay.
I don't understand that at all. That's a tenet of my faith. I wish you would admit that the Big Bang, where matter comes from nothing, is also a faith.
But see, I haven't really said anything about what I think about all that. So.
Okay.
Let me give you an
example. I have in front of me the Quran.
Yeah.
In Surah 18:86, which is chapter 18, verse 86.
Yeah.
It says, when Zulkarnain reached the setting of the sun, he found that it set in a pond of murky water.
Yeah, I've heard this.
Okay. Would you say that is a scientific inaccuracy?
Hold on. I'm sorry. Repeat it. Summarize it one more time.
When Zulkarnain, this guy's name, reached the setting of the sun, he found that it set in a pond of murky water.
Oh, yeah, that's not true. That's false.
Okay, the sun does not set in a pond of murky water every night.
Yeah, that's not true.
So that is a scientific inaccuracy.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, as far as making the claim that a virgin can bring forth a son, which with God as the father...
Yeah.
Now, see, God can take dirt and make Adam. He can take a rib and make Eve.
Yeah.
And most other people have been created by the normal other method since then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But Jesus could be born of a virgin. There's several different ways people could be created, even right in the Bible. From the dust, from the rib, from a virgin's womb. So I guess it doesn't cause me as much concern when I say God said he did it, and I can believe that. Is that the way it normally happens? No.
Okay. Well, I have a million more questions, but I'm sure that we're out of time.
We are. We've got 3 minutes left, and I got 400 more on the line. But hey, listen, you are welcome to call any time, and I'll check with the host in California when I'm coming and see if there's time. I'll take you to dinner.
Okay. All right. You have a nice day, man.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Bye. All right. The Bartman writes in response to the last caller, a burning pile of wood will increase in mass because oxygen from the air is being added to each wood molecule. However, the sun, you're taking two hydrogen atoms and combining them to helium, so that no net change in mass. But in this process, some particles are blasted away from the sun, so therefore the sun does lose mass. Actually, good point. The wood takes in oxygen as it oxidizes. But so much is lost to heat or dissipated throughout, you know, ash and stuff in the surrounding area. I don't say that pile of wood could gain mass overall. Okay. The sun doesn't pull in oxygen or any other materials from space, so it's different than comparing it to a burning pile of wood. Okay, good point, Bartman. That's just an analogy I thought up quickly. I always think up these ideas on the fly, you know. Try to illustrate, you know, the point. Which is why when I say that evolution theory is the dumbest and most dangerous idea in the history of humanity, that illustrates the point of how we feel about it. Okay, we don't pull any punches with the switches. And if you disagree, that's fine. Wonderful. Great. We'll be glad to straighten you out. Okay, young Earth guy, we'll try to get one more in before we close here. I was fascinated by your explanation of the verse in Peter where Jesus went to preach to the spirits in prison. Do you expand on that subject in your updated videos? Yes, I believe I did. I know I do on the college class. CSE 102 or whatever that part of the seminar is where we cover it in college class where there are no time constraints. We cover a lot. Have you been to any of those, Albert?
I went to the first one. I haven't been to the
CSE
second.
CSE 101?
Okay. Yeah.
Can you expand on the subject? Are there any more references to this place in the Bible or Apocrypha? I'm sure glad we don't have to wait in prison before we get into heaven. What the young Earth guy is referring to is, I talk about, you know, people before Christ died on the cross, their sins were covered by the blood of the animals. They were not cleansed by the blood of Christ. And so, therefore, they could not go to heaven. So when Jesus said, no one hath ascended up into heaven, well, he said that while he was still alive before he died on the cross. So that would be correct. But then later, after he died on the cross, now their sins were cleansed. And today, to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. So you do go straight to heaven today, but that was not the case in the Old Testament. There was another place called paradise mentioned to the thief on the cross. Jesus said, today you'll be with me in paradise. He did not say, today you'll be with me in heaven. He didn't say that. Because that day they probably went down to paradise and preached to the rest of the folks down there and said, hey folks, it's finished. It is over. It is finished. Tetelestai. Come with me. Let's get out of here. Okay. let's see. Harold God Love. Hello, I have a question. I have read a couple of websites that frogs have been discovered completely encased in stone, yet have been found to be alive. Have you information on this, and could the flood explain if it's true? Here's the website, umuseum.org. Let me just read it here. One of the strangest phenomena reported, something that can't happen, but stories saying it does turn up again and again. Stories of animals found locked alive deep within stone or wood, with no observable way they could have entered. This is the mystery of entombed animals. being at my seat near the village of Medon, and overlooking a quarryman whom I had set to break some very large and hard stones, in the middle of one we found a huge toad, full of life and without any visible aperture by which it could get there. The laborer told me it was not the first time he had met with a toad and the like creatures within huge blocks of stone. The account, which appeared in the 1761 edition of Annual Register, was attributed to Ambrose Perry, the chief surgeon of Henry III of France in the 16th century. It is an early example. Oh, break time. Nope.
End of the show.
Oh, rats. Okay, Monday. We'll finish up with this kind of stuff.
You going to be here?
I'll be here.
Okay, live.
See you then. Thanks a lot. Bye.